Penguin Random House Audio presents The Earned Life, Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment by Marshall Goldsmith and Mark Ryder. This is the author, Marshall Goldsmith. To Dr. Roosevelt Thomas, 1944 to 2013, for his insights and support, and Anik Lafarge, for bringing us together. Presume not that I am the thing that I was. Henry V, William Shakespeare. Introduction. Some years ago, during the George W. Bush administration, I was introduced to a man named Richard at a leadership conference. Richard was a business manager for artists, writers, and musicians. Several mutual acquaintances had told me Richard and I had much in common. He lived in New York City, where I had just bought an apartment, and we agreed to get together for dinner the next time I was in town. At the last minute, he bailed out for no apparent reason. Oh well. A few years later, during the Obama administration, we finally got together for dinner and, as friends had predicted, immediately hit it off. Lots of spirited discussion and laughs. At some point, Richard expressed contrition about canceling on me way back when, imagining all the good times and jovial meals we'd missed out on during, as he put it, those wasted years before we met. He was joking about the wasted years, of course, but he couldn't conceal a shade of melancholy, as if he'd bungled a life decision that required an apology. He'd periodically repeat that note of contrition the two or three times a year we'd get together in New York. Each time I'd say, "Let it go, I accept your apology." Then, during one of our dinners, he told me a story. He had just graduated from high school in a Maryland suburb. An indifferent student, and not yet interested in college, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. After 3 years of service at a military base in Germany, rather than combat deployment to Vietnam, he returned to Maryland determined to get a college degree. He was 21 and finally clear-eyed about his future. He spent the summer before his freshman year driving a cab around the Washington, D.C. area. One day, his fare from the airport to Bethesda was a young woman, a student at Brown, returning from a year of study abroad in Germany. "We had an hour in traffic to compare notes about Germany," Richard explained. "It was one of the most charming hours of my life up to that point. There was definitely chemistry in that cab. When we pulled up to her parents' very large house, I carried her bags to the porch, stalling so I could figure out my next move. I wanted to see her again, but a driver asking a passenger out on a date was frowned upon. So I did the next best thing. I wrote my name on a taxi company card and smoothly said, 'If you need a ride to the airport, call the dispatcher and ask for me.' She said, 'I'd like that,' making it sound like we were already agreeing to a date. I floated back to the cab, high on the possibilities. She knew how to reach me, and I knew where she lived. We were connected in some small way." As Richard spoke, I was sure I knew where his story was going. It was the raw material for nearly every romantic comedy I'd ever seen. Girl and boy meet. One of them loses a name or number or address. The other waits in vain to hear from them again. By happenstance, they run into each other years later and reconnect, or some variation thereof. She called a few days later, and we set up a date the next weekend, Richard continued. I drove to her house and stopped 3 blocks away to collect myself. This evening was important to me. I could see spending my life with her, despite the fact that she came from a much more well-to-do background than mine. And then I did something inexplicable. I froze. Maybe it was the big house or the swanky neighborhood, or the fact that I drove a cab. But I couldn't work up the courage to walk up to her door. I never saw her again. And my cowardice has haunted me for 40 years. It has to be a big reason why I've spent my entire adult life alone. Richard's voice choked up with this abrupt and baffling ending to his story. His face was so anguished, I had to look away. I'd expected either a heartwarming reminiscence about a successful first date and many more to follow, or the bittersweet admission that, after a few dates, he and the young woman realized they weren't the soulmates they'd hoped they were. Instead, I heard a narrative of colossal regret, that empty and most desolate of human emotions. It was a conversation stopper that landed between us with a tragic thud. I had nothing healing or redemptive to add. Regret is a feeling I wouldn't wish on any human being. Any decent advice book claims to help readers overcome a perennial challenge. Losing weight, getting rich, and finding love are three universal challenges that come to mind. The focus in my recent books has been our behavior at the nexus of where our professional aspirations intersect with our personal well-being. In What Got You Here Won't Get You There, I tackled how to eradicate self-defeating behavior in the workplace. In Mojo, how to deal with career setbacks that stop our momentum. And in Triggers, how to recognize the everyday situations that trigger our least appealing responses and choices. The challenge we're tackling here is regret. My premise is that our lives toggle back and forth between two emotional polarities. At one pole is the emotion we know as fulfillment. We judge our internal sense of fulfillment against six factors I call the fulfillers: purpose, meaning, achievement, relationships, engagement, happiness. These are the guideposts that dictate all our striving in life. We invest enormous resources of time and energy to find purpose and meaning in our lives, to be recognized for our achievement, to maintain our relationships, to be engaged in whatever we do, and to be happy. Our vigilance and striving here are unceasing because our connection to these six factors is fragile, fickle, and fleeting. I have intentionally excluded health and wealth from this list of fulfillers. Surely two additional major areas for all of our striving. Under the assumption that, if you're listening to this book, these two objectives have already occupied much of your adult life, to the point where you may have each under control. You look in the mirror or look at your bank statement and tell yourself, I'm good. Mostly, though, I'm convinced that if you're in need of diet, fitness, or get-rich advice, you'll find better answers elsewhere. Happiness, for example, is a universal temperature reading of our emotional well-being, which is why we frequently ask ourselves whether we're happy or endure the question from others. Yet happiness can be our least permanent emotional state. As brief as a dream, our nose itches, we scratch it, we're relieved and happy. Then we notice an annoying fly buzzing around the room, and a chilly breeze gusting through the window, and somewhere a leaky faucet is dripping. This goes on from moment to moment all day long. Our happiness vanishes instantly and constantly. Meaning, purpose, engagement, relationships, and achievement are equally vulnerable. We reach for them and grasp them, but with alarming rapidity, they slip through our fingers. We think that if we can create an equivalence between A, the choices, risks, and effort we make in pursuing the six fulfillers, and B, the reward we received for doing so, we will achieve a lasting sense of fulfillment, as if we've discovered our world is fair and just. We remind ourselves, I wanted it, I worked for it, and my reward was equal to my effort. In other words, I earned it. It is a simple dynamic that describes much of our striving in life. But, as we shall see, it offers an incomplete picture of an earned life. Regret is the polar opposite.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?